Larry, let's start with Trump's decision on selecting Senator Vance to be his vice president. And in your opinion, what would this bring to the US foreign policy?
Someone who can at least articulate in a coherent fashion what strategy is, what objectives are. He's much better than Donald Trump at explaining things. The good news is with respect to wars in places like Ukraine, he believes in moderation. While he's sort of climbed on board the same ideological train as many talking about seeing China as this threat we have to deal with, I still I think he is inclined to believe that we're better off finding a negotiated solution with China as opposed to getting into a war. His views with respect to Israel are very much in line with the whole pro-Israel doctrine that infests the U.S. politics in both the Democrat and Republican parties. So I don't, we're not going to see a change there. Or any change we see there will be precipitated by what happens on the ground if Israel's facing imminent defeat, for example. So but I think, I like, I of all the candidates that were being touted as potential vice president candidates, I thought I would have preferred J.D. Vance or Tulsi Gabbard.
Yeah. It's so amazing, Larry. Right now, I saw in the media that they're attacking RFK Jr. and Jill Stein. I particularly saw this, that they are pro-Putin and they are helping indirectly Donald Trump to win 2024.
Yeah, that's all they got. Hey, you're pro-Putin. Oh, the Russians are interfering in our election. I mean, the United States just needs to, with respect to that, and excuse my language, but it needs to be said, the United States needs to shut the fuck up, okay? When it comes to lecturing other countries about political interference, first, let's get rid of the National Endowment for Democracy. Let's get a radio-free Europe. Let's get rid of all these United States Information Agency activities. All there are U.S. interfering in the domestic politics of every other country on the face of the earth. And yet we get upset if we think, oh, the Russians spent $20,000 on Facebook ads. Oh boy, that'll. Yeah, that's going to turn the election. Oh my God. Please. We've got a real problem with our foreign policy. The good news about Trump, why they're trying to get rid of him and try to kill him, is he still represents enough of a change that he's not going to continue to play ball with, let's start a bunch of wars so we can justify expanding the defense budget another 100, $200 billion.
What are the latest information of this failed attempt to assassinate Donald Trump? And is there anything new coming in?
Yeah, well, there were two counter sniper teams. Initially, it was presented that there was only one. And I assumed incorrectly, I was wrong. See, I can do what J.D. Vance did. That the video we had of these two counter snipers, Secret Service, they were to Trump's right, and as you're looking at the screen, to be on the left side of the screen, up on this roof, one guy had a tripod. Turns out there was a tree that obscured a lot of their line of sight vision. They couldn't actually see the sniper. What's interesting is when you hear the shots go off, I thought the guy with the tripod shoots and I mean, his rifle dips down. So, that's called throwing the shot. I thought, oh, maybe he didn't shoot it. I thought it was the guy to his right, but then you look at the guy to his right, he's like scrambling down the roof. Well, it turns out they thought they were being shot at, they were seeking cover. There was another counter sniper team that was on a roof of a building that was to the left of Donald Trump off on this side. And as you're looking at Trump, it'd be your right. They had a direct line of sight. They're the ones who took the shot. Other news, it was confirmed that the Secret Service did not do an advance work on that building. They left it for the local police or whatever to do. Complete break of protocol. What the Secret Service is supposed to do, be in the lead, in charge, conduct the advance work on a perimeter that may extend as far out as 1,000 yards or, like kilometer. And to ensure that there is no potential sniper position that provides line of sight to where the speaker will be standing and to lock it down. What does lock it down mean? It means either you have Secret Service personnel there or you have state or local police who are assisting there, or you bring in some other federal law enforcement agency if you're shorthanded, but you make sure that they're there, they're in contact with you, that you have communications with them. They didn't do that. There was some suggestion that perhaps the counter sniper teams didn't know if this guy was friend or foe. Well, that's another problem. What you're supposed to do, one approach is to have a day, what they call a color of the day. So you've seen pictures, I'm sure, of like in the war in Ukraine, where a Ukrainian soldier will be wearing a blue armband, like blue scarf tied around the arm. Russians will have a white one around their arm. That's how they tell, hey, if I see blue, I know it's my guy, or if I see white, I know it's the enemy. Well, they didn't have that. So they couldn't tell who was state, who was local. It was just a mass confusion. There wasn't coordination over the radio channels, but the radio channels did have messages that they were seeing a suspicious personnel and they had concerns he might have a gun. At that point, with that information, the Secret Service agent in charge said, okay, Donald Trump, you're not going on stage. You're going to stay back here until we get this sorted out. And then they get out and get it sorted out. They didn't do that. So, I mean, it was one screw up after another. Plus, they had pulled off Donald Trump's regular Secret Service team, sent him, gave him the weekend off, said that they were tired and worked too hard. And they brought in a bunch of people that were, frankly, not experienced working with Trump, were not experienced working as a team. This would be the equivalent of, name your favorite football team in the world. And instead of taking all the star players off that team, you sit them on the bench and you bring in a bunch of kids from the local high school who were good soccer players in the high school, but still they'd never played at the professional level like that. That's what you had. So that leaves the question. Are we talking sheer, utter incompetence? Or was this deliberate? Did they deliberately pull the detail, put in an inexperienced detail, and fail to do certain procedures so that there could be an attempt on Donald Trump's life and hopefully killing 2 days before the start of the Republican convention? Because if he had died, the Republicans this week, instead of having a joyous celebration and crown and crowning J.D. Vance as really the future of the Republican Party, they would have been in total chaos. They might have even had to cancel the convention, or they'd be working through who can we nominate. And Nikki Haley would have said, "Oh, well, I came in second, so I should get the go ahead." It just would have been a mess. So I look at that and say, there's a lot of points. This may have been deliberate, planned, and that the kid was a patsy. He was used. There are lots of other conspiracy theories out there, some suggesting there were multiple shooters. Okay, where were the shots? Who got shot by the other shooters? Because Donald Trump certainly didn't get shot. And so if you got another shooter, are they even a more terrible shot than this kid? Because he got his first shot off close, but after that he missed widely. Not, and it's not unexpected when you're firing that kind of rifle quickly, you're going to get quite a deviation in the flight of the bullet. So, and then there's other information. Oh, that the shots went off and tw took 26 seconds. The shots were fired. Bullshit. You know, the video at normal speed shows all shots were fired within 6 seconds. That's about right. To get 26 seconds, you got to slow the video down to like 0.2, and it's talking, real slow. Okay, maybe you might get 26 seconds out of that, but that's not what happened. Yeah, well, at that point, we both Chris and I understood that there was only one counter sniper team, and we know that the counter sniper team is the one that took him out. But it turns out there was another counter sniper team. They were the ones who got the shot off. But Chris was exactly right that when you're looking through a magnified optic, the magnification can get up to a point that, like, if I was looking at your face from here, all I could see would be like the mouth, maybe, or even half of the mouth. It can get that big. So, you know, what you finding that target with that kind of magnification can be difficult. That's why once you get it, you lock onto it and you don't move. So I had assumed that they had locked onto the target because it looked like they had. Didn't realize that they were looking through a tree. But clearly the snipers on the other building did. But it raises the question, why did they wait until he fired shots to shoot his ass? Because they clearly, once he started shooting, they had a clear shot at him and they took it. They should have had that shot before. So there's a lot of questions that need to be answered. But the Secret Service director, she needs to go. She's a clown.
Did you see the picture that people are just filming the guy crawling up the
Yeah,
building? It's
yeah.
unbelievable. At the same time, we've learned that there were law enforcement snipers in that building. It's
Yeah, no,
unbelievable.
they're down on another floor. I don't blame them because even if they came running out quick, they may have, had difficulty getting up there and doing something. But there were still were other police and Secret Service out there and about within shouting distance that they should have done something they didn't. And come back. Was this incompetence or was this deliberate? Part of a deliberate plan to kill Donald Trump? I don't think you can rule that out. I think that has to be looked at seriously as one of the objectives of this.
Yeah. And the main duty is just to prevent it to happen, not after shooting and then
Right.
kill the guy. This is.
Well, yeah, see, that's what they could have done. The kid didn't need to die. If this agent in charge said, okay, Mr. Trump, you're staying here. All right, he's in a protected area. Go get this kid, locate him, arrest him, stop him. Now, if he would have started trying to shoot officers arresting him, then okay, yeah, they would have shot and killed him. But they could have caught him, disarmed him, and then take him in for questioning and realize, boy, did we dodge a bullet today? But that didn't happen. And this was a combination of errors, each one making the next one worse. The on-scene commander for the Secret Service, completely incompetent, made every wrong decision possible. And that may be because he or she was young and untrained and hadn't had zero experience with this. So you get tossed into this, you don't know what the hell to do. Some of it's common sense, but just because it's called common doesn't mean that actually everybody has it.
Larry, how did you find Donald Trump at the convention? He seems so emotional.
Yeah, well, I'm gonna watch tonight. I watched last night just to watch, see J.D. Vance. I thought it was impressive. What the Republicans have learned to do is put on a good show. And not letting the speakers go out there and just ramble on and on and on. Short, sweet, to the point, have something to say that's going to be relevant to a theme. But the one thing that's happened this week is Trump's been at every evening session sitting there listening. First time in the history not just of Republican conventions, I think of any convention, Republican or Democrat alike. So Trump is there, and it's helping in part energize the crowd and make the event worth listening to. But I think this near-death experience that Trump had has had a sobering effect on him. It's changed, sort of changed his outlook on life. Not that he had a bad outlook before, but there may have been an arrogance factor and willingness to say some things that probably shouldn't be said. So I'll be interested tonight to see what tone he takes. He may have been intending a full-throated attack on Joe Biden, and that many people would have criticized as harsh and unseemly. I think what I would do if I was in his position would be talk about reconciliation and healing, talk about nonviolence as opposed to violence, but talk about accountability. And within that, you know, Trump's going to be able to talk to and identify with those people who have lost loved ones to fentanyl overdoses, been murdered by illegal immigrants, or raped by illegal immigrants. So he's going to be able to, I think he'll have a speech that will reach out to people in that regard, which would be quite different from I think what he was originally planning on doing.
It seems that the Democratic Party is doing everything to get Biden out of the race, but he's not willing to do that.
Well, I'm tied into some people who are pretty well informed about the latest in Democrat rumor mongering. So right now I call it a rumor, but they're saying that Biden will resign this weekend. Okay, we'll see. This acquaintance of mine who passed that on who seemed very confident of it. Biden, I think, may withdraw from the presidential camp. I think he will ultimately withdraw from the presidential campaign. The key is who will be his replacement. If he doesn't withdraw before the convention, then he will be nominated. Kamala will be his running mate. And then if he runs into any kind of health issues after the convention, which are likely, and then has to resign, that means it'll be Kamala Harris sort of running on her
Larry,
own.
it seems that the Democratic Party has postponed the convention.
Oh, you just got that as a news flash?
New York Times reported.
Yeah.
It seems something's going on.
You know, so the moves are afoot to get rid of Biden. And depending upon who you talk to, some Democrats want to get rid of Kamala, and other Democrats want to hang on to Kamala. Kamala wants to be president. She's not giving up on that. So the question is, will she go quietly, or is she going to go kicking and screaming? Or is she going to, you know, really fight to hang on to it? Any way you go at this, if they don't keep the Biden-Harris ticket together, then all this money that Joe Biden has raised for the campaign can't be used for the others. They can't just roll it over. So then they got a money problem. And it's not like they got a lot of time. You know, we're looking at you got 4 weeks in October, 4 weeks in September, that's 8 weeks. And 4 weeks in August, you know, 4 to 5 weeks. So, 8, 13. So we're, you know, 14, 15 weeks away from an election. And the Democrats are a good 2 to 3 weeks away from their convention, depending on when it's postponed. Yeah, this can be ugly for the Democrats. And while they're scrambling around trying to figure out what they're going to do, the Republicans, they got their team in place and they're going to be firing on all cylinders.
But the problem with Kamala is that she doesn't fit to be
She's
The
not real
Democratic.
li she's not well liked, that's for sure. You know, and she's remember the song Karma Chameleon? That's a little bit her. She's the Karma Chameleon because when she first ran for office in California, she claimed that she was an Indian American. And I don't mean like Cherokee or Sioux or Cheyenne, Comanche, Chippewa. No. She was Delhi, Bombay, Mumbai Indian. Tandoori chicken Indian. And that was how she first ran in California. All Indian community rallied around her. Yay, one of ours. Oh, get out the naan, So the chutney, we're gonna party tonight. Then at some point she decided, you know what? I'm gonna make more political hay if I'm black. So she also became a black woman. You know, that's right. She's now the Aunt Jemima of the Democrat Party, okay? So she becomes this black woman. Oh, the Indian community are pissed off. What? You're denying you're part of us? Oh. So, she's got some issues on that front.
We know that the Democratic Party is not going to consider RFK Jr. to be part of the Democratic Party. But at the end of the day, in your opinion, is he going, RFK Jr., Bobby Kennedy, is he going to endorse Donald Trump?
No, I think he'll stay in the race, if nothing else, to hurt Biden, hurt the Democrats. And I think as Trump and him talked the other night, I think it's very likely that he could very well become a candidate as the attorney general in a Trump administration. And that's where I think, Trump is going to try to go with, we're not going to make this a strict ideological purity test per se. But we want to have people that will say, hey, we're Americans and we're going to get along as Americans. We're going to try to work together as Americans. I would also anticipate Tulsi Gabbard being offered a spot in the cabinet. So it's not going to be just strictly Republican. But they're also going to hit the deck more prepared than ever than he was last time. There's Heritage Foundations working on Project 2025. Which is coming up with a whole list of people that could be they're willing to come serve in a Trump administration. So this, like I said, I think the Republicans are going to be in a much better organizational position. The Democrats are going to be their hair is going to be on fire, and they're going to be trying to put it out with hammers.
Russians are talking about that Ukrainians are using chemical weapons. And how do you find right now the conflict in Ukraine?
I know that there's they've made that claim. The reality with a chemical weapon though is it's affected by wind, temperature, terrain. So it's not really a very effective weapon, number one, so it's a sign of desperation. And use of that by one side can lead to escalation from the other side. But again, it's like, why would you want to use a chemical weapon? Yeah, it works well in a Hollywood movie. It does not work well out on the battlefield. Can you control and predict the weather? If you can control and predict the weather, then yeah, you might be able to use a chemical weapon. So it's just, it'd be one more, be chalked up as one more war crime by Ukraine.
How do you find right now Orban? He's trying to do everything
Yeah.
at his disposal to bring some sort of sanity. He's talking about China, United, the European Union, how they can play an important role in bringing some sort of sanity to Ukraine. But it doesn't seem that anybody in the European Union is paying any sort of attention to him.
Well, I guess he must be a devout Christian who takes to heart the words of Jesus, blessed are the peacemakers. So he's trying to make peace. The bid being attacked furiously by some other key members of the European Union. Just those European Unions, they're on a a glide path to destruction if they keep this up. You know, Orban's trying to offer them an off ramp, and they're refusing to take it. So, you're very dangerous for Europe, because now they're going to be faced with United States is going to end up pulling the plug, and they're going to be all by themselves.
Bloomberg reported that the United Kingdom is saying that the biggest threat right now is China. When the United Kingdom is talking this way, I remember what has happened to Ukraine. When they decided to have some sort of conflict in Ukraine, the first country to show some signals in that direction was the United Kingdom. Right now, it seems they're going the same way. They're sending some signals that the next enemy is China. Let's go after China. And maybe pressuring the I don't know, upcoming president of the United States to go in that direction together with the establishment in the United States.
Now, just what exactly is Great Britain going to do to China? Threaten to send one of its two aircraft carriers that they can't get out of the harbor, one that's always broken. Send a couple of mine sweepers that will run into each other and potentially sink. You know, figure out how many. There's 70,000 guys in their army can learn to speak Chinese in the next 6 months. You know, they can't even fill a football stadium in the UK. They're going to take on China. That's real. I mean, it's so stupid that you got to think, you got to say, okay, tell the truth. John Cleese of Monty Python fame is writing this material. This is a comedy sketch, right? What are they going to do? Again, they can't even get their ships out of harbor and deployed for any length of time without breaking down. So, what, they're going to walk to China? They got to cross most of Russia or a lot of the stands, you know, Uzbekistan, Turkmenistan, Tajikistan, one of those stands to get there. So, this is, you're not old enough to remember CETO, are you?
No.
Do you even know what CETO is?
Yeah,
We talked about it before.
you said it was something like NATO with the.
It was NATO Junior back in 1954, Southeast Asia Treaty Organization, and it was set up primarily to be sort of like an extension of NATO in Asia to go help the French hang on to the colonial empire in Vietnam, all in the name of fighting communism, which didn't work out too well. And CETO, formed in 1954, closed its doors in 1975. Well, now we're back to what I call son of CETO. Not only they're not going to call it CETO, they're just going to call it NATO East. CETO 2.0. And, only this time, instead of they're going to, they're not going to have the same collection of nations. Thailand, I don't think, is invited to play this time. Whereas Thailand was where the head CETO was headquarters back in 1955, 56. They're looking for the West is looking for a fight that it can't handle. Hell, they can't even stop the Houthis. They're going to stop the Chinese? Yeah, explain that one to me. I don't see how that works.
Do you think that if Trump wins, they're gonna do the same thing that they have been doing during his first term, just getting him involved in the some domestic problems? If you remember Russiagate, they didn't let him to work.
No, he's.
Right now, do you think they're gonna do the same to him? And is Donald Trump going to show some sort of experience that he's not going to get involved in this kind of problems?
Yeah, no, I think he's already acknowledged that he was a little naive in his first term, and he learned some hard lessons. And so he's, and now with this latest attempt on his life, I think he's bringing a new level of seriousness to this, and almost like he feels like he's been anointed by God to fulfill this destiny.
Yeah.
So this will be an interesting, when he hits Washington, they're going to hit it prepared. They're not going to get blindsided again. And I frankly, the you know, none of these lawsuits and legal cases are working out in their favor. The ones, you know, the one in New York City is going to eventually get overturned as well. So this is, I think he knows what he's up against now. He's not nearly as naive as he was 5 years ago.
The other thing would be Donald Trump's policy toward China and Iran. And toward China, we know that in one of his latest interviews, he said that he's not going to do anything militarily against China, but he's going to have a big fight, economic kind of battle between the
Yeah,
United States
yeah.
and China, which is totally okay as long as you are willing to have some sort of conversation with your rival.
Right,
And
right, right.
how do you see this his attitude? Do you think that that Senator Rand's gonna help him in this direction, or he's gonna be part of the Republican core that is much closer to the Democratic Party, who are talking about being more aggressive toward China?
No, he's going to be more transactional. You know, the book, The Art of the Deal, was not just a marketing ploy, at least in my view. It really reflected something fundamental about Trump's approach to dealing with international relations, having a negotiated deal. I mean, he sincerely tried to do something with North Korea, and may even try to revive talks. And that there's going to be more emphasis on negotiation and actually diplomacy under Trump, I imagine. It'll be interesting to see who he puts in as Secretary of State. I do, you know, he has had failings in the past with his appointments. You know, John Bolton, terrible. Nikki Haley, terrible. And a couple of his chiefs of staff were equally bad. You know, we thought Mad Dog Mattis over at the Department of Defense turned out to be a real problem. And then he selected Mark Milley as chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. I mean, just, you know, one bad choice after another. So he's got to fix that. If you fix that with the right people, then I think we can see a change in approach and policy.
I remember in those days he was willing even to cut a deal with Iran. He said that. I remember that. And
Yeah.
right now we have a reformist government in Iran who's willing to have a better relationship with the West, especially with the United States. How do you see the possibility of having some sort of conversation if Trump wins between Iran and United States? Or as Paul Carrick Roberts said to me, that as long as Israel is in between, that nothing of that sort is possible.
Yeah, I don't think direct talks with Iran are a possibility. They should be. You know, the Iran's typically portrayed in the West as a terrorist state. And in my view, it's not. It's viewed as a state sponsor of terrorism because it provides financial support or has to Hamas and the Hezbollah. Although I'd argue Hezbollah has become much more independent and actually may at times disagree with Iran. But you know, Iran, I think the Iranians have been pretty pragmatic all along. Yeah, sure, they've got the ideological, the religious dimension, which affects how they view the world, how they interact with the world. But you know, it's not a contrived religious belief, it's sincere. And the United States is foolish to pretend that it can eradicate that or stop that. The United States also refuses to take responsibility for its own actions in creating the animus that exists in Iran towards the United States. Overthrowing the government of Mossadegh, I guess that was 1953, so that's 71 years ago. You still got a few people running around that remember that time. But it did leave a legacy. It's a colonial legacy. Having the Shah come in and take over left some real problems and anger among the population and how they got treated. So this is a long way of going about saying that the problems that exist internally in Iran are Iran's to work out. The right, proper approach for diplomacy is that the United States should say, let's deal nation to nation so we don't hurt each other. And we do what we can to help each other, but we'll stay out of each other's internal affairs. You do what you need to do. Now, I told you early on in one of our conversations, I learned the hard way when I got in between a couple who were friends. They're getting a divorce, and I dared to offer my opinion on the matter. I should have kept my mouth shut. All I did was make them angry at me. And they stayed married longer just because they were mad at me. They still got divorced, but stop. The United States needs to learn to stop meddling in the affairs of other countries.
Larry, it seems that the situation in Gaza is a key problem in terms of the relationship between Iran and the United States.
Right.
And if something happens in Gaza in terms of Hamas, Hezbollah, and make some sort of deal between Israel and these parties, maybe there would be some sort of political settlement between these countries. How do you see that happening in Gaza if Trump wins?
Well, I think from Donald Trump's standpoint, my own personal view is I hope that the situation in Gaza and within southern Lebanon is settled before November 5th. Because otherwise, if this crisis is still percolating, it is going to drag United States into it and Trump into it. The problem Israel has right now is, yeah, it can kill 40, 50, 100 Palestinians a day, and it's genocide. But it does not change the face of the war. Israel does not effectively control all of Gaza by any stretch. And the Palestinians are still there. They're fighting back and they're causing losses on the Israeli side. More important, emotional exhaustion and physical exhaustion on the part of the Israelis. And now they're even talking about maybe they're talking about going into Lebanon, attacking Hezbollah. Now it looks like they're backing off of that. Tough to tell each passing day. The war is not going as Israel hoped. And its ability to sustain the fight, I think, is going to be extremely limited. One of these days, they're going to run and say, "We're exhausted. We've exhausted our manpower. We're out of some critical munitions. Let's negotiate a deal."
And how about Saudi Arabia? Is Trump going to have a better relationship with Saudi Arabia? Is that possible to?
Remember he did the sword dance with the Saudis. So, and he's sure that he can charm them. Whether the Saudis are going to be amenable to such a charm attack, I don't know. Tensions have reemerged between the Saudis and the Yemenis. The Houthis are not backing down. Yeah. They remind me a little bit of a honey badger. Have you ever seen a honey badger? This little animal in Africa? Mean little bastards. Oh my God. They'll take on lions and, they'll fight anybody. And they're not that big, but boy, they're ferocious. That's the Houthis. The Houthis are a Middle East version of the honey badger. And we keep saying the United States keeps bombing them, UK bombs them. They keep launching more missiles and hitting more ships. So, our military strategy, as far as the West strategy to contain Yemen's not working. So at some point they're going to try something new.
But what's the reason behind this differences right now between Saudi Arabia and Yemenis and Houthis?
I honestly don't know what has reignited this, because it looked like 6 months ago, 7 months ago, Iran had agreed basically to stop supplying Yemen with the Houthis. I think the Saudis have been encouraged by the United States to keep the pressure up as one way to try to weaken the Houthis. And the Saudis so far, I think it may have complied with that U.S. request, but the Houthis are having none of it. And they're telling the Saudis, back off, or we're going to start firing these missiles at you too. Go screw yourselves.
Yeah, you just described Houthis the way that, yeah, it's they're unbelievable how they're fighting right now.
Yeah. Walking around with sandals and a curved knife and a hot sun and sand in Yemen. Yeah, it'd be a little tough, hard as woodpecker lips, they say.
Yeah. Larry, just to wrap up this session. With the situation right now in the European Union, do you think that if Trump wins, the position of the type of mindset that we're witnessing right now in Orban fits so? Doesn't matter. These people who are against the conflict in Ukraine, against any sort of conflict and war, are they gonna getting stronger, or that's not gonna change anything in the European Union?
Yeah, no, I think it will strengthen their position. They'll be much better relations with the United States than some of the others. So, Starmer's position in England is by no means certain and fixed. Macron's up in the air. Olaf Scholz up in the air. So you've got a lot of some of the key countries, pretty chaotic. So there's, so these the dynamics of the situation. Plus, once it looks like Russia's going to apply the coup de grace to Ukraine, then the smart countries in Europe are going to be looking to negotiate and get a deal with Russia. They guarantee that Russia won't invade them, and Russia's going to seek guarantees that they won't attack Russia.
Thank you.